Okay, we're going to get started here. My name's Gene Rule. I bake the coffee and do the mailings here. So I call myself the General Secretary. Welcome to Sunday Morning at the Marxist Library, which is a project of the Institute for the Critical Study of Society at the Nebel Proctor Marxist Library. And what we are is a group of diverse individuals. Some of us are members of discipline parties. Some of us are members of undisciplined parties. And some of us are just individuals with an interest in Marx and social issues. We come from different traditions, but our programs do not reflect any kind of group consensus on the issues concerned. But we are united in our respect for the work of Karl Marx and the belief that his work will remain as important for the class struggles of the future as they have been for the in the past. Now, we have a really good group of people here. I'm really pleased that so many people are out here. What we'll do is we'll take about, we have two speakers, I think.
Three
speakers who will introduce themselves, since I don't know their names or backgrounds or anything. And they will kind of introduce the program. Then we'll move around the room to the left always, I think. Proceed in that way with a three-minute limit on everybody but these three individuals. Halfway through, we will stop for a fund appeal to support the Institute and the library. We do have expenses, and that's why we're able to make this time and space free to the people who need to do presentations. So I want to thank the people who organized this on behalf of People's Park, and we're in solidarity with you. Keep up the good work. Before we move on, some of you may realize that there's a war getting started in South America, and there are plans, who knows what's going to happen next. But there will be a demonstration at 1 o'clock today at Lake Merritt, and I think some people may want to carpool down there from here. We need to end by 12:30, so that will give you ample time to get down there. So there are some announcements of this, and next week we're doing a presentation on Venezuela. So if there's anything you need to know about Venezuela, for example, Venezuela is what? Spanish for Vietnam? Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so with that, I'll turn it over to you guys.
Okay. Just to add that I think, don't you have on the 13th, a MacArthur's having a meeting here to have a bigger coalition against the what's happening in Venezuela. I think it's up here on the 13th. I saw his email.
That's Wednesday night, I think. Yeah. It's the End the War Coalition.
Yeah. Okay, so I live down the street. I've been here many, many times. And so I'm going to try and interject a little bit of how this, I think we could be more collective here and do things, be a little bit more active. That's what I see a problem coming down here all the time. So one leaflet, who owns the park? Pass that around. That's the other way. We have a decal class, a whole very interesting, about 20, 25 students have joined. And Tuesday at 5 o'clock, every Tuesday for the next, I guess, 16 weeks, 15 or 16 weeks.
5 o'clock where?
I'm sorry, 166 Barrows.
You mean on campus?
On campus, yeah. So, we really didn't work this out too well. We've had quite a lot of things going on. I just got through taking care of my grandkids, and I didn't really have a time like usually I could think the thing out. The main thing is, the injury to one is an injury to all. I haven't heard that too often, actually. Within the park, we have not heard that. The problem that I would like to project to my comrades here, to my Marxist comrades, is class and race. We took over the park as it was sort of in the middle class, upper middle class of the movement at the time. And over the period of 50 years, the people that needed it the most were, in a sense, the lower part of the society. And that is sort of now, it's that reputation is the problem we're having in organizing. In other words, within the Marxist movement, we have a class and a race problem. Now we have mostly poor people. Of course, there's this whole thing about lumpen proletariat, but I don't even think you can include the group that are up there as lumpen at all. I mean, they come from backgrounds of skills in one way or another. And we have now, in the last, two years, more poor people, many more poor people, and a lot of black people hanging out at the park. So because of that, and since I've been involved for 50-some years with it, I've seen sort of within my milieu of Marxism, no support, basically. So I think that is a problem that we really have within our movement, is how do we deal with it? How do we continue on and work together with the coming from various backgrounds and biases from those backgrounds? We develop biases. We have to deal with that. I have to deal with it in my life. Like, for example, when it comes to children, people are hostile to young children. You know, Mike, that's you. You got all these grandkids. You take care of that type of thing. So, so how did I get into this? People's Park started with when we were having rallies what was called Provo Park, what's called officially Concentration Square, whatever it was. Want to say something? Speed it up?
Yeah, just make sure we have time for the other people to talk. And yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Go around the room.
A whole history
and then,
here.
Pardon?
Yeah. I see, there is a whole history. You're getting into it.
So anyway, we were having these down rallies, and we considered that we were sort of, it was Bill Miller and I and a few others, we had these rallies against the war, and we have bands and people from, I've heard of how people came, it was during the summer, school wasn't going, came from everywhere, these weekly events. And so what happened is, the city council cut them out in 1969, so I decided we got to continue this on, and I lived right on this side of me where we live in Red Square there, Dwight Telegraph, here was this great piece of land that wasn't being used. So that's sort of what happened. We went out and bought sod. But the whole motive was to have a concert and to talk about the war. And once we did that, actually, that time we took, the first day we took it over, we did that. You know, and that is why we have the stage now. Everything is the content of the park is far from the stage. So I think that is the big issue of what we're going to lose here. We're going to lose the right to have concerts up there, which we won through the courts on the weekends, when they're, especially in the summertime when there's nothing happening on campus. So anyway, they came in, we did that. It's so great to have this opportunity to talk. I'm going to throw in things that usually, you know, even within the identity, does not want to discuss. So anyway, we're on campus. Dan Siegel's giving a speech. He says, take the park. The cops turn off the sound. Key thing. Cops turn off the sound. The audience doesn't know what to do. It sort of turns around and heads down towards the park because he said, take the park. Get down at Bancroft get down at Telegraph and haste. The kids open up the fire hydrant, which was a traditional thing, and in the process of that fire hydrant being turned off, the sheriffs are pelted with these long or short wrought iron bars that had been cut purposely. And then the sheriffs use that excuse to go get their shotguns, which have been preloaded with birdshot first and buckshot. They've been preloaded that way. They go down and then they start to systematically to come around and come up Dwight towards Telegraph and systematically just shoot everybody they saw. They saw somebody, they shot him. And in the process, I guess in that area around where the Socialist Bookstore was at Bancroft, I mean at Telegraph and Dwight, about 50 people were hurt or shot. One above the Socialist Bookstore, Rector was shot and 4 days later died. It's my contention that he was suffocated in the hospital. Regan needed him dead. He was going to live. They told his parents to go home to San Jose. He's all right. Suddenly he ends up dead. Just like Martin Luther King happened to him. So you have to take in consideration. This is 1968. Everything is happening. You know, it's all these. The pigs are doing everything. They started attacking the anti-war movement when we went down to L.A. and Century City in 1967. From then on, every demonstration we had would be attacked, tear gas or whatever. So that sort of led to the situation of us taking the part and the confrontation.
All right, thank you, Michael Delacour. I think in the interest of time, we should maybe have it just be a little bit more limited in regards to the speakers, like maybe 5-8 minutes, and then we can just move on to the usual 3 minute end. I'm sorry I didn't make, I should have made this a little bit more clear to people who are speaking. We should focus on kind of like the more recent history, I think. The recent events.
I'm going to object.
Okay. Anyway. All right, Lisa.
I'm a person here.
I'm Lisa Teague. I used to be here. I've never been here before. Thank you for having us. We're continuing the struggle that was started back in 69, and the park received, you know, its most serious threat in many years last spring. In May, there was a gauntlet thrown down. We will build student housing by 2020, said the chancellor, on People's Park, even though we have these other sites and so forth. So we have gotten more organized over the last few months. Adam has helped us enormously with that. And Aiden has as well. And yesterday, we held a march on campus. We're out there and trying to retain control and trying to convince people that the park must be saved. For so many reasons. Let me give it to Aiden.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name's Aiden Hill. I use they, them pronouns. I'm a People's Park activist as well as a county councilor for the Green Party of Alameda County. And so I think in the interest of what I can give you, I'll just give an introduction about who I am and then talk about how I relate to the park. So my story with UC Berkeley, as well as People's Park in general, is basically the story of segregation by the American school system. And so I came from high school. I grew up in Southern California, went to Henry J. Kaiser High School, was a national thespian in my theater production. I ended my high school career joining mock trial at the last semester. Whatever you call it in high school. And I got congressionally recognized for my best pre-trial. My best pre-trial activity for the competition. And so that really led me into a public sphere rather than acting. And so I went to community college at Riverside City College. That's in Southern California. I worked for 4 years in communications as well as political science. I studied under a Marxist professor that taught at Oxford University. And that's really where I understood what's happening with the darker nations, specifically in Latin America, the land grabs that are happening by oil and capitalist industries. And I really went from like this conservative mindset into a radical mindset, in the sense that I really didn't see the productive capacity of taking people's wants and desires away from them and leaving them helpless. And so eventually all that led me to Berkeley. I was dedicated to the public school system my entire life. Went from community college to this system. I was accepted to Berkeley. However, a series of events happened that led to my own displacement. First was the Orlando shooting happening, then Philando Castile was murdered the year that I got accepted. Milo Yiannopoulos was allowed to speak, trying to out undocumented students, and eventually the council non-payment policy that UC Berkeley implemented against students really pushed me into getting student debt, as well as not being able to afford housing in the area. And so I took about 2 years to recover. I came back to Berkeley. The first thing I did was run for public office. So I ran for city council of the newly created district number 7, supposed to be 80% of a student district. And I kind of found that People's Park was the centerpiece of that area, the Southside Telegraph area. And I found that it aligned with my values, being a Marxist scholar, wanting to be a part of the resistance, being in an area that's being disenfranchised. That's where I wanted to put my energy. And so the things that brought me to this place was on 9/11, the village encampment was burned down. I went to Oscar Grant Plaza. I talked to the people there, and I really understood the struggles of what it means to be unhoused in 2018 and being subject to the human rights abuses that are in Oakland. Likewise, I went to the Green Party National Convention, and the day I got back, Nia Wilson was slain at MacArthur BART. So that really brought home, I believe that Nia Wilson should have gotten the opportunity to go to UC Berkeley, being from the Oakland area. And so that really pushed me to like try to focus on public education and equitability for others. And likewise, Paradise, the Paradise fires really brought home the importance of environmental awareness. Our city was covered in smog for about a week. People who were low income and the most at risk couldn't breathe. And I saw that it was so much more important to protect places like People's Park in case of a natural disaster. All that being said, I also got arrested on UN Day for asking a question in Wheeler Hall. So I kind of took that as a pride of joy, being a part of the Milo Savio descendants arrested for civil disobedience. But the question I posed to the administration, as well as the people hosting the class, was, with the death of Nia Wilson this summer, what would Mario Savio do? And the answer is Mario Savio would act no matter what. And so I, at that point, seeing the entire election, seeing the state of affairs that's happening in the Bay Area, I really thought it was important to put all of my energy within People's Park because of the desire for free speech, because of the historical relevance, and to really put the California Master Plan on the heels of the Board of Regents to make sure that they're accountable to the people of the state. And so I'm a scholar. I've been around the world. However, the fact that I still can't get a basic education from UC Berkeley underscores an entire system based on apartheid. And that entire system's coming at a head in 2020 with the attempted destruction of People's Park. And so that, I know I put out a lot of theory in there, but I just want to say that's the reason why I'm placed in this movement, because I'm simply a student, a child, really, 25 years old, wanting to go to school. However, we're going against this monolith, which is capitalism, and it's time for us to unite. And so that's why I'm here.
Okay, so I think just maybe go continue going around, maybe introduce yourself and just kind of like make comments about, you know, what's been happening, ask questions, etc., and kind of like bounce off each other.
So it's a 3 minute thing?
Yeah. Yes, 3 minutes now.
So which way is it going?
This yeah. one.
Yeah.
I was working at KQED at the time of the killing of what was his name?
Rex, and we
covered it. I was 22 or 23.
Wow.
And so it was, and at that point, it was called Special Projects, and of course Reagan cut us all back, et cetera. But I know quite a bit about it. I think what I'd like to know is what is the most recent thing that has promulgated having this discussion? In other words, what is the university doing most recently?
They plan to take a 2004.
We're going around.
Yeah. Who's going to answer the questions?
Well, can they answer it, or should we just
somebody
go
in a circle?
Maybe we shouldn't go around. Let's just kind of do free form. 3 minutes. I'll take stack.
I wrote down your question, though.
I did.
Okay.
Okay, so anyone...
I think what's happening is let's go around.
Okay, we'll go around.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm Anna Sophie. I'm actually from Austria, and I was reading the slingshot. I just got to. I'm woofing in Oakland. I was reading the slingshot and read about people's park, and saw that you guys had a presentation. That's why I'm here. I'm actually just to learn to hear.
What part of us?
From Vienna.
All right.
Yeah, I am Max from Vienna too. Yeah, same thing. We heard about it, and I went to get some information about it. I sailed across the ocean to the white flying.
That's awesome.
Well, I appreciate this opportunity to have a not a confrontation, but. Something like that, non-confrontational confrontation between the People's Park movement and this library. I have to admit that I almost didn't come. I don't follow it. I like, you know, many of your references I was unaware of, you know, the dippers, people who died, and the fire or something, and so on. You know, because I tend to look at the world in a different way, that in a Marxist way, that there's a global confrontation between the forces of progress represented by generally China and Russia and that block of countries, and the forces of reaction represented by the United States. And how do we insert ourselves into the struggle? And then I wonder, how does something like People's Park, which is very little down here, way down at a local level, how can I relate it? And how does it relate to that? So that's a general question that I have. And I don't expect an answer, but I hope everybody will think about it.
I'm Jerry, and I was at the fringe of things, but actually hearing about it mostly because the KQED news had it out, and the reporters from the Chronicle had been laid off or on strike at that time, and were reporting on KQED, and KQED and the Chronicle have never been so good at that. And you really got an idea of what was happening here. I was down in San Jose, and I had just learned about Marx and had disappointments from Eugene McCarthy and the convention at that time and stuff like that. But I identified with it a lot from a distance, and it's good that it had some contact to that. I was also in the National Guard, not a very military person, but avoiding the draft. And it was kind of good to report that, you know, people in the Guards were talking about fear. Are they going to call you to Berkeley? I was not in the unit that was called here. But it was just generally, as soon as somebody found out you was also in the Guards, it would be our subject, and that seemed kind of good.
My name is Joe, and I work with Food Not Bombs. And I think part of the answer to your question, probably a big part, is that the history of People's Park has always shown under close examination that the university looks for administrations in the city that are soft, that are malleable. And they found something with Jesse Arrigan and his current crew that they knew right away, and they started, you know, getting control of his political will, and now they've got it pretty much sewed up, or so they think. And one of the things that is really important to me that maybe a lot of people don't know about is that because the cities all over the country have been so drained of their finances, you know, by the capitalist corporate structure and the war machine that is now, you know, reigning, so that they have no money to put into public projects. And as an example of that, University of California is going to, or is proposing to build this student housing on People's Park with private money. They do these things called public-private partnerships, or P3s, They lease the land to a public developer, a private developer. He builds everything, takes all the risk, and then manages it. And the worst part of it is, other than the fact that, you know, land, public land, and probably soon public water and air will fall under the same privatization, the university guarantees these developers 100% occupancy in these residences. So the students are becoming, you know, pimps to private corporations. The other thing I use my little time to say is that on the 20th, the Mario Savio Lecture Series is having a lecture at Pauley that Mr. Reich is going to speak at. And I have to work at night, but I would hope that somebody would challenge the university to defend, you know, their murderous repression of almost every progressive movement that ever, you know, passed through their Sather Gate.
That's their whole job. Probably.
So, I'm Jean, and I'm a native of Berkeley, and I was here during all the demonstrations and so on. And I take literally that it's called People's Park. As far as I'm concerned, it's for the people, and that doesn't include the administrators of the University of California in my mind. I'd like to see it used for shelter, for the people that had been using it for shelter, staying there up among the trees, all the trees that were there. There are not very many left now. I was just appalled when I saw that nobody was there anymore. You know, apparently the university sees to it that they get arrested or something if they go in there. So now they're on the sidewalk on Dwight and so on. I mean, it's ridiculous. That park, not only that park, but Ohlone. I mean, part of something was going wrong with the fight against for People's Park, and they went down and they took over that land over BART. That would have been full of housing if it hadn't been for the same people that set up Ohlone Park. I mean, they've got these vast spaces where they could be a tent city. They could have a dog park, which I don't know how many thousands of dollars they spent on renovating not long ago. But they can't have people in tents in these parks. I mean, that's what they should be used for. I don't want to see the entire area filled with that, because those musical events that happen there, I think they're very important. I love those. I love to go to those and dance and everything. And we used to have, you know, that in Provo Park too. That's what we called, I think that's what we called the one opposite City Hall. And, you know, now there isn't very much of that. We need to retain those things and to provide shelter, provide the tents, good tents, waterproof tents with bottoms that don't get water in them. So anyway, that's
good
it.
Job.
My name's Greg. I have a background in computer programming and graphic design and music and stuff. And I'm a community member in Berkeley. I lived near the park for 10 years and gardened there for 5 years. And now I live farther away. But I've been a regular user of the park for 18 years now as a community member. And always been interested in the music there and the gardening, of course. And it was really awful to see the trees go down. And I think basically the society's got, you know, this mechanized addiction to construction, and sort of like we're programmed by our architecture and environment to continue to perpetuate this cars and buildings and roads and parking lots thing. And I think that's really the craziness, and to protect the green space of People's Park helps people understand that there's another alternative to how you can use space. So for instance, we talked to Alfred Tu, a UC Berkeley student in the architecture, and he's got a bunch of the alternative building locations for housing, and there's many locations that provide many units that could totally replace in any need for converting People's Park into housing. So we really need to protect that precious green space for the mental health that it gives to everybody, to go to a green space where you're not being sold something, you know, by the commercial strips of Berkeley and all that stuff, you know, or being sold housing and all that. I mean, housing, turn part of Durant Avenue, which is five lanes wide, turn three lanes of that into housing and a new green space, and then leave two lanes for the traffic, okay? Focus less on traffic around Berkeley and create housing in these vast asphalt wastelands.
Which street did you say?
Durant Avenue. In particular, I was thinking, you know, in the area where all the restaurants are, just east of Telegraph there. But you could also do it on the west side of Telegraph, too. I mean, it's just a huge space, and it doesn't need to be wasted like that. Turn that into housing and more parks and keep people smart. So that's my mentality. And I also update the People's Park org website, so anybody's got any information, I can post it up there for you. And this video and other stuff, we have a video channel and all kinds of stuff. I'm trying to stay modern.
I'm Adam. I'm a undergraduate student at Berkeley in sociology and philosophy, and I've been trying to, I've been trying to help organize around People's Park. I'm facilitating the decal on People's Park, People's Park and the Right to the Commons, and I'm also trying to get together a panel on campus and a student group as well. I'm basically trying to get the students more involved and active around People's Park and sort of like get youth involved around People's Park as well. There's a, in my mind, there's like a large contradiction. There's, there's a lot of older people who are involved in the struggle and, there's also younger people and they don't really necessarily always get along. So, yeah, we're trying to work through that.
My turn. I'm Ed Monroe. So a lot of people call me Eddie Monroe. I'm a street vendor. I sell on Telegraph. I started doing that in the Christmas of 72, desperate for money. Came out with some prints and somehow people gave me money, so I kept coming back. In 75, I want to be real quick history, what pulled me into the park. The city and the people were going to start making rules about street vending, so I thought we better organized, so I put together an election. Oh, no, you can't do that. And all I did, I took nominations, held an election, and a lot of the importers had to leave the streets. So that happened in 75, 76, and for years I was involved in enforcement of street vendor issues. In 79, when the university announced they were going to build that parking lot, they were going to pave the lot, I went down there basically to keep an eye on things because I thought it was going to be trouble. I wanted to be able to give the vendors a heads up. Jewelers, potters, people with breakable stuff. I wanted them to be able to know in advance if there was going to be trouble. And that was what brought me in there. And I watched how that unfolded and how that parking lot turned into a giant garden that it is today. I could tell you the whole story about how that happened, but it's interesting and amusing some other time. From then, the anniversary concerts, there were a group of us, they came to me in the late 80s and asked me to help them put on the anniversary concerts because I ran the street fairs on Telegraph for about 9 years. I created them, got the first permits, and got the first Christmas fairs and other street fairs on Telegraph. Because of that, the People's Park people wanted to close off Haste, so they came to me and said, would you help us do that? So I got involved with security at the anniversary concerts, mainly getting cars in and out and trying to break up fights. From then, when the university announced they were going to build the volleyball courts, the city created a commission. It was called the People's Park Youth Standards Commission. I relented and allowed Nancy Skinner to appoint me to that commission. It was 5 years of meetings all about the volleyball courts, and you know the number of riots, and I was kind of trying to be in a riot prevention mode, and it took me 5 years, ultimately, all of us together to get that volleyball court out of there, and there have been less riots since then, you will notice. That's all I want to say about that. But since then, I've been working with Hallie and Michael and a number of other people at the annual concerts. So that's my biography, how I got involved with the park. I have some answers to your questions. And later on, there's a little piece that I wrote some time ago that answers some of these other questions about the pertinence of People's Park socially, culturally, and everything else. but I would like to pass to Hallie right now.
Okay, I'm Hallie Hammer. I came to Berkeley for 72 and 3 when I was a street musician playing a lot on Telegraph Avenue and was around the park but didn't do any activism around the park at that time. Went back to New York after our commune burned down in 73 or was burned down. And I came back out here again end of 84 and then started playing at the park and doing a lot of music at the park with people and also putting in some plumbing and getting the, you know, helping out with things as a large group of people were. And then the I moved into Bob Sparks' house, probably 88. Bob was a People's Park activist. And he had some rooms that he was renting out in the house, and there were several of us living there at the time when the volleyball courts were being put in. Bob took a chainsaw and knocked down the volleyball courts with a chainsaw, at which point they came to our house, and this is the UC police. We were on Hearst and 6th, nowhere near the campus. They came to our house with battering rams, rammed in our doors, looking for the chainsaw. I was actually at work at the time when they came, but the police were holding my housemates hostage, would not let them even use the bathroom without a policeman going. One of our housemates had a prosthesis, and he had just had his leg amputated, and they wouldn't let him get his leg. I mean, this is going on with the UC police, so I don't have a lot of fond thoughts about the UC police. Just the idea that the UC police would come to our house that far away and, you know, throw their weight around really rubbed me the wrong way. So anyway, I've been moved to the future. I've been working on the anniversaries, and I really, you know, when we had the volleyball courts go up, all of a sudden, people sprang out of the woodwork to come to the park and go to the aid of the park. And I think it's really important at this point for people to know how dire the threat is to the park. I don't know how widespread that knowledge really is in the town of Berkeley at this point, in the city of Berkeley. And I think it's very important that we publicize and have events at the park and make sure people know just what is being threatened.
My name's Lou. You know the chainsaws at the Long Haul now.
Oh, cool. Andy told him that he flushed it down the toilet.
So to me, People's Park was sacred, and I wish I could be as big a fanatic now as I was then. So people mentioned the volleyball court. This is the early 90s. A bunch of us were reading the British Marxist historians. We were reading E.P. Thompson about the Luddites, and we were reading The World Turned Upside Down by Christopher Hill about Gerard Winstanley and the Diggers. This earth was made to be a common treasury for all. So it's a communist or communist reclaim the commons kind of movement. And it's a utopian vision. And it's not just save the park. It's transform Berkeley and transform Oakland. And we need to be visionary and imaginative.
Right on.
I'm Ron, and I wasn't here when People's Park happened, but I came here in the 80s, and it's a side story, maybe to some people, but to me it was kind of one of the introductions to the whole issue was meeting somebody who became very important to me, who was a mathematics graduate student at the time, and he was
Mike
at People's
Mayo.
Park. Mike Mayo, yeah, he was at People's Park when one of the participants was shot.
James Rector.
James Rector, yeah, and he was left holding the body. Mm-hmm. He said, I guess there's a mural somewhere where he
yeah.
pictured, yeah. And I happened to have another connection to him. He ended up dropping out of the whole academic world and translating Marxist mathematical manuscripts. And we had a collaboration a discussion around what's the meaning of that. And that's when I came out here to the Bay Area, and I recognized that People's Park is kind of iconic for a lot of the reasons I have this connection to it. And I think the meaning of it can never be separated from, I think, what one of the speakers was talking about, the totality of this crisis right now. And the fact that people's parks are popping up all over the place. You know, people are just pitching their tents. Where I run every morning at Lake Merritt, there's a homeless man there who now he has a GoFundMe to support him. His stuff was thrown into the lake by, I don't remember, Joe the Jogger. And now little other tents are coming around him. And I think we've got to start more talking to the people who are homeless and getting their perspective and their view of, you know, the totality of this crisis and how they're trying to survive under this horrible capitalism, and also engage them in this discussion. And I do think, you know, everything about trying to save the park is really important.
Right on.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, my name's Steve. First, I'd like to commend Michael, Hallie, Eddie, Adam, Joe, and others that have maintained a constant presence at the park and organized demonstrations. Also, what can be done to attract more students to use the park. We need them as allies as many as possible. And the other thing is, the 50th anniversary is coming up in April, and I think it's so important that we all come out really strong, with a strong presence for that. And lastly, I remember as a kid in upstate New York, a few blocks from my house, there was a wilderness area that, when I was 9, 10 years old, we all played in this wilderness area, and we built wooden huts. And it was our turn without adult supervision. It was wild. And 10, 12 years later, I went back home to visit my family, and I remember I drove my mother's car over to that area just to reminisce. And when I got there, there was nothing left. It was just a huge shopping center, and I just sat in the car and cried. And I didn't
want to
do that with people's
part. Hi, my name's Steve. I'm local. I'm a teacher in the area. I just came by the lab to learn more about what's going on.
Amen. Well, my name is Baruch, and I'm a guest. And this is my first real introduction to what People Park is and what it means to various people. Thank you.
My name's Rich. I'm part of the Sunday morning here. I actually assess the programs you do. Lauren.
My name is Oshola, and I wanted to introduce Baruch a little more fully because this is his first public appearance after about 40 years in prison, 20 of them in solitary.
20
years in solitary. So he's going to be here later tonight at 6:30 upstairs. We're going to talk about the ongoing prisoner struggle. Mm. And the whole point of it is that every struggle has a universal of people wanting to be self-determining. This is what was important in People's Park. This is what was important in the prisoner struggle that we'll be talking about. And it's there is solidarity on the basis of those ideas that extends to everyone.
My name is Norma Harrison, and it's capitalism that creates street crime. It creates boardroom crime, but it creates the misery that goes on the streets next door. It's not individuals. There's no people born criminal. I'm a born-again communist, originally communist, and so People's Park stands, you know, importantly for that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I participate with Peace and Freedom here, a Peace and Freedom Party, because it is a venue to be able to use the electoral podium for a very small amount and talk to people about what I don't affiliate out of Democrat or cop or Republican, any of that stuff. I have an independent position, and I want to share it with people, and it's based on whatever I can glean that is communist analysis, people living and working together. Somebody I was looking at said, based on the idea of that no human exploits another person, which is just the way that you go get a job and the boss is exploiting whoever is taking that job, and there's just no rationale good enough to eradicate that feeling. You go and say, oh, I got a great job, and a couple of days later, man, this is shit. Because the conditions of the exchange of what's produced, under what circumstances and so are so alienating, are so off-putting. You have to leave your children, you have to leave, try and find the care for them, or you leave your lover that you've been involved with. The whole relationship of having a job in society instead of having an integrated kind of a life. So I run for office every 2 years for the Board of Education here in Berkeley on the basis that school is a very oppressive structure. It cannot be reformed like capitalism. It does what it's supposed to. And I said before that the university was doing bad things. I said, that's its job, is to alienate us from our humanity and fit us into society. And at the top level, at the elitist level, at school, that university is, God, you have got to be something you could really turn around and hate. How did I become that? Very supportive of this oppressive society, which is required in order to reach that kind of position. That's it.
My name is Alan. I'm active in the library. And first of all, I want to thank the folks who came from the organizing effort to hear an update about what's actually going on in the park, because it's kind of hard. It's something that's undermined, but you don't really hear that much about. People's Park played a very significant role in my life. I was a student at Berkeley in the early 70s. A lot of stuff going on, the anti-war movement and the Black Liberation Movement. And the draft was sort of breathing down our backs. In 1972, Richard Nixon mined Haiphong war crime, terrible war crime in Vietnam. And Berkeley erupted in rebellion, basically, against it. There was like a week of, several weeks actually, of just daily street fights against the police. One of the things that the university had done just before that period was that they put up fences around the park. I think it was the first time that they attempted to, the first reversal, in terms of like retaking the state, retaking the park. And so one of the things that we did was we went down to the park and we tore the fences down as part of these anti-war demonstrations that were taking place. There was a terrible, violent response on the part of the state. Basically, the Alameda County Sheriffs did what they did in 69 and just started shooting people, this time with rubber bullets. A lot of people were very seriously injured, beaten. Several people got their eyes shot out by these police actions. So I would say two things just to make this short. I think the first thing that the park really means is the kind of the arrogance of the state, of the capitalist state, in terms of really trying to, symbolically and in the real world, stomping on people who are trying to rise up. And I think that just like in 69 and the second time the mining of Haiphong Harbor, the connections between the park and the arrogance of the state and fighting the state and the struggles of people here and around the world against imperialism, which I think has really, had an effect on me. And from, I sort of went my way, and I've been in Oakland all these years, but sort of had its lasting effect.
Okay. last but not least.
Okay, if you want to go first.
Go on then.
Okay, my name is Raj, and I wasn't directly involved with People's Park. A friend of mine was Mark Guerrero. Some of you might know him, passed away 4 or 5 years ago. But I see this struggle for People's Park as a part of the wider struggle for of the people against the properties and capitalist classes. And so in a way, this is the same thing that we are going to do a program next year, next Sunday, in about Venezuela, where John Bolton has declared we're taking the oil. Okay, well, they want to take a land here. And University of California is part of that power structure of the property and capitalist classes. And so this is our common struggle. The question is, like Adam said, what is the strategy we unite to effectively fight? And that's my thing.
Very good, thank you. I must say bravo, Gene. You know, I've been here in Berkeley since 1957, and I happen to be David Nadel. Nobody's mentioned his name. He was very, very strong, very, very passionate about People's Park. He was one of my best friends. I was very active, involved in ashramas and music and dance, etc. And through that, the People's Park issue came to my eyesight. And I know how he worked and a whole lot of stuff. But I just have to tell you, my one confrontation with what was going on, I was going to school, UC, and I was driving home down Bancroft in my VW bus, and I saw all of these kids come charging down Telegraph Avenue with blood in their eyes. That's when James Rector was killed. And they were coming down right to get to campus right after that. And my VW bus was right in the way. And I thought they were going to turn it over, and I just inched my way through. Like, I don't know how I did it, but I did it. And it struck me, the violence and the passion and what this place meant to humans. And it still means a lot. And I don't know, you know, the older generation, they don't know. It's something that happened in the past. The city council, they don't know. They're dealing with other things that they think are so important. But we've got to, and Jesse Arrigan, oh God, you know, we've got to, I don't know how to bring it out. I don't know how to make that place, People's Park, the significant, wonderful place that it was, stay meaningful to humans. That's life. Okay, that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank you. I'm still Gene.
Yeah.
This is a really a good meeting. I had some questions about it to start with, but it really turned out good. This is one of our larger, more diverse groups. I really thank everybody for coming. But okay, let me. Okay, I will finish and let him.
Yeah, sorry.
Right.
Later,
sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just want to say I graduated from UC Berkeley in 1963. Debt-free, because they didn't charge tuition back there. I had a fellowship to an otherwise respectable Ivy League university. I got my PhD. I spent most of my life in academia being shielded from the worst aspects as far as my personal life is concerned. But I saw what was going on. I taught 35 years of anthropology and Marxism. I got paid to teach anthropology, and I threw the Marxism in for free. But I wanted to say a couple things here. One is university administrators. My first contact was my first day at Virginia when the president got up and gave the convocation. And he said, well, you know, this year, for the first time, you're going to see women in your classes because the university is admitting women for the first year. And he went on to say, and this is not because we lost that lawsuit. It's because we were planning to do this all along. just to sign right there. Never trust a university administrator. And I spent 35 years fighting the administration at Cal State Long Beach. One incident where they put, where they wanted to put a parking lot on an organic garden, sort of similar to here, but it was also a sacred Indian site. And we won that because the ACLU got involved. And the university spent about $3 million on bogus anthropology and bogus lawyers, but we won. So I've had some experience with that. But I wanted to say maybe two more things. One is that I love the University of California. I mean, I think it's a wonderful institution. I know about it. But I think people need to know that every nuclear weapon in the U.S. arsenal was designed at one of three labs, all run by the University of California. So not only does it have bloodstains on its hand, fingers, and so on. So I think we need to bear that in mind. And the other thing, I don't want to cut that person out, but let me just say one thing. We are a grassroots organization. We depend on donations from our people who come here. We get no money from the foundations, the 1%, and we would not accept it otherwise because we prefer to be dependent on you folks. So let me pass this around and then move back to the other fellow that was passed over. And then we'll go to support the library and the institutions that we have here.
Chris.
Thank you. I think speaking of sacred and how far we're getting from that these days, I think People's Park was that, and I'd like to see us try to be that more, as well as more people taking care of it. As I said at the meeting we had in the university last year, I don't know why we couldn't actually, we have such a brand here, I don't know why we couldn't maybe raise some funds if we had a good agreement how to use them. And really be taking care of it as people ourselves. We have a free box again. I remember that. I used to meet at the university back then. Carrie and Dana. And then we had all kinds of people meeting with us. But I think it's really an opportunity under this pressure now and to kind of remake it. And then now this is post-Occupy. I'd like to see something more like Occupy. I think it could very well get that way, the way that our economy is and everything, and have something there that could be about a sacred space of healing. Maybe even soul healing, psychedelic healing, something I sent Michael a messenger last night. It's something I see is the trajectory of this park. And when I say rebranding, I think also just sort of coming full circle about, you know, we had the hippies in San Francisco, we had more political here, but we also had the park, a place of refuge. And, you know, right now people are hardly keeping it picked up. And so I feel like, you know, Michael and I went to that Social Democrats meeting on this university, and they were saying, well, maybe you guys were doing more. And so I'm wondering how we can herd cats here with maybe some kind of rebranding. I have ideas about a caretaking guild that I had since I was in Amsterdam. There's lots of squatting, but it's like a war. They have it. Well, there's empty places. You occupy it indoors. And I can imagine, I'm open to a building in People's Park, but it'd be our building. It would be a healing place. It may be a place for psychedelic initiation and something that can grow out of this great legacy of the commons. And what is the commons? The right to the commons is a great class you see now. So, my two bits. What? Well, I was just mentioning to Steve that I heard, you mentioned Jesse Arriet, I heard it was the city who pushed Bart to build a fence to push Here Now out of most of that nice green space. But I feel like, you know, the ball's in our court, and it's almost an opportunity, almost like Trump is, I see too, to bring people together. We're really galvanized.
and nice room to do it in.
Okay, so do you want to go around again or take stack? Or?
I think stack would be nice.
Okay, Aiden, you had your hand up.
So I just wanted to hit a little bit on all of the points, but briefly. So I definitely heard schools alienate society over here, and I think that's so valid because we can't talk about the education system without first talking about the indigenous kidnappings that were introduced into the American school systems. Likewise, the South-South segregation, the apartheid movements, segregation within the South, moving into the lack of affirmative action, especially within California, and how that's resegregated school systems. UC Berkeley only has less than 1% of indigenous or Native American students in the university system, less than 3% of black students within the system. And so what does that mean as far as who's getting the top tier education? Likewise, I think it was Greg that brought up the matrix idea. And so this year, 150 years of UC Berkeley's history, they really have banners everywhere telling about what's happened. And I found that it was 40 years of the matrix, specifically with computing. But I also see that the best way to introduce people to the park is fix the matrix. So the park is a common space where if every person is, let's say, a unit, instead of going through the roads, a park is usually just used to go. So you can go from Haste to Dwight without going through Telegraph or Bodwich. So the parks, and Ohlone Park's the same way, is where people come together just to get by through their, not to get by, but to get to their destinations faster than usual. Or they can divert their destinations. And so bringing people to the park rather than walking on streets, going past construction, that's all going to help bring people together. I really want to talk about, like, the next fight is over public space. And right now you see buildings going up, you see sidewalks closed. People's Park is the same fight. The right to have an area where people can just exist, or to exist on streets where trees are. I'm trying to get to everything, but like, how does People's Park relate to the global struggle? Power. So the most power I personally believe anyone has is at the local level. The president can't do anything without authority from Congress members, Senate, but your mayor can do something, your city manager can do something often without impunity. And so that also means that local organizations and community groups can activate themselves at the local level. People's Park deals with sanctuary city policy. The City of Refuge Act in Berkeley during the Vietnam War draft. Right now, we have a potential climate in which people are coming from various locations because of global capitalism, needing a place to stay. Sanctuary parks are a part of that effort. Likewise, I studied mostly in dependency theory, and so I see that San Francisco Bay Area is really the heart of the empire, the centralized location where commerce is being funneled, likewise with New York. What that means is we have a unique opportunity to really target those who are in power. Nancy Pelosi in San Francisco, for example, to really show that the people themselves will not allow them to be used as cannon fodder, will not allow their intellectual capacities to be subsumed even by Google, by Apple, by these corporations that are coming out. And so that this is a part of that struggle. The conversations we're having right here and our collective history is a part of that organizing. And I don't see a difference between this space right here and People's Park. I think both have to come together for their own different uses. But that's just what I'm thinking. I don't want to take too much time.
Michael.
Before People's Park, Berkeley was sort of a sundown town. Black kids, especially the young kids, were not allowed to get past Grove Street. It was now Martin Luther King. They would be stopped by the police. And by the advent of the park, it gave them a chance of refuge up there and on campus and near campus. At 69, I went back to the working class and started organizing supposedly the workers, I walked in a lot of losers. I mean, we've had about 30, 40 years of losing strikes. One of the things I found in People's Park, I could get more people around me than organizing in the union. So that's my attraction to it. It's somehow or another you have a broad coalition of people and more interest. To finish out here, look, we've been in this cycle of down, 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 down. And now with the teacher's strike, the last couple of years, we're starting to go up. We don't need this in the center of going on an upward direction as far as the class to lose this. Cycles are long. Look at how long it's been. It's been 33, 34, 35 years since we really had a winner as far as the working class. So I'm proposing if we lose this, it's going to be a real downer for this town, and it's going to take a long time to recuperate from it.
So don't propose we'll lose it.
Don't what?
What?
Propose it we'll lose it.
Everybody.
I had a question that you wrote down. I'm still not.
Yes. There's two questions, and I'm a notorious windbag in our group, so.
Yeah, that's true.
First of all, the most recent incident has been the demolition of how many trees? About 30 trees, roughly.
30.
This happened over the Christmas holidays while
bad,
the students.
Bad yeah. trees. Very bad trees.
They
needed a spanking.
Well, they got murdered. That's what happened. This is the thing. I pointed this out before. The big money always does this, they lie. Now, they came in at, 5 o'clock in the morning and chopped down those trees with some specious report that there was something wrong with each one of these trees. And I'll go into this, is that when I got there, it was about 8 o'clock, and there were already people who hadn't caught on yet, but they were protecting trees. Lisa stood in front of a tree. She happened to be standing in front of the tree when she realized that tree was in danger, and she plastered herself to it, and a few other people did that too. So the thing is that the thing that's really wrong with those trees is that they were in the way of large construction equipment. I went over there while they were protecting those trees, went to the other side of the field, or the other side of the park, where they were removing a line of trees along the edge. They killed those two palm trees, and then they were moving those other, and I looked at it, and I looked around, and I went back to where they were by then really guarding trees, Lisa and the rest of them. And I went back later, I looked, and they had created a highway. It was good enough, big enough to get big. So that is the most recent incident. Then we had a settlement, an encampment for a few weeks with people who tried to protect those trees. And we knew, a lot of us knew, that they can bring in 150 cops, which they did. And arrested 6 people, and we're in the throes of that now. We had 6 people who were defending the trees various ways. Some were prepared to try to climb up in some of the trees. They showed up. I mean, some of them have been around the park before. Some of them, you know. And when you have a nighttime encampment, you know, it can be touch and go. So that's the most recent incident. There's another question that you asked about how does People's Park relate to the international struggle? Fundamentally, that's the question. And I think a number of people here who are here, not us, answered it quite well with the things you said. I'd like to hit on that a little bit just from my experience of how I got into that first thing with the parking lot. And over the years that I've been involved with the park, and these are important because I think I wrote this all out when we were doing that statement last spring. But I think it's the practice of free speech and the exercise of our constitutional right of assembly. We have been exercising our right of assembly and free speech eloquently for a long time. Every year, not just at the anniversary concert, but at other concerts, we have people get up on our stage who are going to say things nobody else says about the leadership of our nation, about Yemen, about Jamal Khashoggi. We keep it pertinent. whatever's happening. And it's, but what I'd like to do
it's
this.
It's 3 minutes.
Okay.
Wrap it up.
Okay. There's a lot of events that are held in the park over the last 50 years. The Hare Krishna Festival, the anti-war rallies, May Day festivals, hip-hop shows, the Bears, the Bear Fest. They bring out yellow and blue balloons and have a what are they, pie-eating contests and stuff. But also, the Trump people marched into the park last year and waved flags and complained about Obama. And so what it is the park is for everybody who comes. And as I said before, you may not even agree, but when the Chinese government cracked down on those protesters in Tiananmen Square that night, I just happened to be in the park. There was about 20 people just showed up, and they lit candles and just stood there in solidarity with the people who had been arrested halfway around the world. And that is what the park is. It's where people come. That's what I want to say.
I just want to say something about the universality of People's Park. I was in China. I was wearing a People's Park t-shirt, and somebody got in the elevator and said People's Park Berkeley, and the guy in the elevator, he didn't even speak English. He went, People's Park Berkeley. You know? There is a People's Park in Shanghai as well, but it's not a different kind of a park. But People's Park is recognized not just here in Berkeley, not just here in the Bay Area. People's Park is a symbol to people all over the world. And what happens to our park is really significant in a large sense to what's going on in the entire world. So I just wanted to put that up there.
Yeah, I just remember at one of the anniversaries at the park, the explicit players came up on the stage, a nudist group, and at that particular anniversary, there were a lot of people, maybe almost 200 people, and the police were in the back of the stage trying to arrest them, and because there were so many people in the park, we surrounded the police and protested, and we drove them out of the park, and the explicit players were able to perform.
You have to start talking here. Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Somebody's in charge. Good.
Okay, great.
Just to, I think to answer her question a little more fully, the thing that we really need to deal with right now is the university wants to build housing. That is the biggest issue because they have a lot of power. They have a lot of machinery, a lot of money, corporate connections, you know, corruption at that level too. Who knows? Whatever it is, they have a lot of stuff getting ready. So that is the main thing that we need to focus on if we want to protect the park. Sure, there's Let a Thousand Parks Bloom, and we definitely want to keep that thing going everywhere in the world as well, in all of our diversity and excellent, you know, philosophies and stuff like that. So, but still the issue of preventing the park from being developed into student housing and ruined as a green space is so important. So I think focusing on maybe, you know, strategies to educate the community and the student community about the alternatives, because that's going to be the thing I think that relieves the pressure, because they're going to try to build more housing anyway. That's the thing. So there's alternative locations. So we got to research that. There's some articles on the People's Park website, and there's a UC Berkeley student, Alfred Tu, who's an architect who's got a lot of information on the alternative locations. He's been working on this kind of stuff.
A little loud?
Yeah.
There's an architectural student, Alfred Tu, who's been doing a bunch of research and work on alternative housing locations. And there's an article on peoplespark.org site, and we're gonna try to focus more on the alternative locations strategy. I think that's. I think that ultimately that's the best strategy to prevent the park from being ruined by construction.
Joe.
Oh, I've been working on trying to get the park recorded as in the National Register of Historic Places. So I went to read Chancellor Haynes's papers, and of course, it's packed with lies. But one of the ways that the university tries to deflect or find workarounds for their lies is they collect a few letters from people that have accepted their lies. So there, in the file I was reading, there were five or six letters in 68 and 69 of people, neighbors of the park, complaining about what a mess it was and how much crime it was. And these are all, you know, public relations scams that the university and the city actually produces, you know, sending people, cops to the park and giving out like 12 jaywalking tickets in one day. Oh, that's a crime. Anyway, so these little slips of paper in the chancellor's folders reminded me Mike's idea that one of the ways, probably one of the best ways, is to cut off their money flow. And I think anybody that's gone to the university, anybody that knows people that have graduated, should write letters to the chancellor or the president saying that they're in favor of preserving People's Park, don't build, and you're not getting another dime from us. We're going to cut you off. You've been a bad chancellor.
Thank you, Jay.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Did you have your hand up? Okay.
I think this idea of connecting with alumni is really good. And I think that's the journalism.
I think Aiden was next then.
So there's this talk about like what happens if we lose the park. I just really want to pinpoint it that there's no alternative if we lose the park. If we lose the park, the city of Berkeley is therefore owned by the University of California. And what do I mean by that? That means without People's Park, without Ohlone Park, without Willard Park, which are all small land masses, there's nowhere else that this area can grow agricultural yields or make sure that there is a clean space for the citizens. Everyone else is either subject to the city of Berkeley's rule of sidewalks or lives in a UC-owned property. Now, the chancellor, Chancellor Crist, has already come out on record that they would like to see a double, if not triple, increase in the student housing. The reason why is it's easy to make money if you charge students $2,000, $3,000 a month to live because they're a captive audience. So that's the plan of the University of California. They want to expand housing in order to create an excessive revenue. And remember, the Board of Regents is what, they have almost the general income of the size of San Francisco just by existing. So they really do have this kind of quasi-legislative, quasi-judicial authority that no one, not even the state of California, can really comprehend at this point. And I also want to mention, remember that Amazon is already interfering with public records requests, specifically at the University of California, Berkeley. UC Berkeley is already starting on CRISPR patents, which is gene editing software. So not only are genetically modified organisms, food, going to be controlled by the university, but also our bodies have the opportunity to be controlled by this technology. And so we can't really underestimate the threat that the University of California holds on this, on our lives as a whole, because California is the fifth largest economy. And if we lose People's Park, that's the last place that students, organizers with the University of California really show opposition to the status quo. And so there is no alternative. We have less than 12 years for climate change, catastrophe, the worst effects. Universities are already prepping to control the state of California, which they have for over 50 years, over 100 years. And so it's really the time now to make sure that we are organizing against this excessive use of force. And I really want to put that out there. Watch what's happening with CRISPR. Watch what happens with the food yields that are going down. We're that much close to a climate catastrophe. We have People's Park as a defense.
Norma.
14 o'clock. There is a fellow that comes and lectures here that talks about, that reminds us that we're at war. We say, oh, peace, peace, we want peace. That's irrelevant. Everybody wants peace. We can always say that all the time. The idea of structuring against being able to have these constant attacks on us is another question. And to that regard, Al reminds us that we do need an army of people ready. So our job now is to see how much all of the actions that we engage in can expand people's ability to say we're so fucked and we're so disorganized. The invasive behaviors you're talking about are so extensive and so far-reaching and so forth that they seem impermeable, that they seem going on for forever.
School, by the way, is a great supporter of this. We have to remember that school at the upper levels of so-called elite study is who provided the people that made the atomic bomb. And they do that whole thing. They provide bookkeeping for the whole system. They provide people who fit into these cubicles. And everybody complains about their jobs the same way they complain about school. Just so you know, and I'll pass it out, I have a book online called School is the Opposite of Education. We have to learn to attack the structures that control us. And that means we have to talk, see if we can't get people to be honest in their sensation. I call it selective amnesia when people say, oh no, I love school. No, you didn't. You hated it, but you adjusted it. and more than that, you hated that your child had to go through this. There's a wonderful science fiction story about that. So to throw off the chains in our heads, and he said, yeah, you know, the kid is going to have to go to school. We're at least going to give it a rationale that said, school's a terrible thing, it's being done to you, and you're rising in resistance, and that's your life, even if you're in third grade. So this was like
that's
real recent.
Really bad.
Very recent.
3 weeks ago.
January 22nd. 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Some of the best people in the city fight the cops, fight the police.
Michael, you were next.
I was thinking of coming when I came here. A lot of us, or a lot of people that come to this, are part of the academic or come out of the academic community. Well, as trying to get back at the bosses, as you're, you know, the deans or whoever, let's come up with a struggle to deal with trying to organize the university. You guys have much more background in trying to convince the, especially the professors, to be on our side again. They did vote for us during People's Park or afterwards, but now I don't think we have one professor that stuck their neck out. Or there's one assistant professor that has, the one that's doing the decal class. But most of them are very, very afraid. The other thing, what I see in the school too, is when we go, we've intervened this year more than having a long, long time into the campus, that the students are, they say nothing in the classroom, they don't move around, they're very, very passive. So I think we have to, you know, including ourselves, we're pretty passive, and Trump has scared the shit out of us, let's face it. I won't even miss college work because I'm afraid that in a way it'll come back on me. That the repression, we know what repression is. You know, I spent time in jail a little bit. We know what it is. We know what they can do to us. So I think we have to take it into consideration. But you guys coming out of the universities or out of the schools, I think you have ideas that you could think about when you go home, and how can you stick it up the boss's ass?
Raj was next.
Okay, yeah, I just want to point out the pressure on student housing is real, and it's coming from the fact that San Francisco has become a mecca for big money to come in from Wall Street and other places and invest in a speculative thing. All of a sudden, it's a mecca of high tech and all that. And then the overflow from there is coming to Berkeley. So I think student housing pressure is real. Therefore, the threat to the People's Park is coming from that. Now, the university wouldn't have done it because they don't want to face public opposition, but that pressure is building. So this is how it's connected all the way into the capitalist system. And I'm not offering any answers, but this is a tough struggle, but it has to be waged. You know, I think it's for the cause. That's all I want to say.
Okay, I think like over the last year, I guess since the presidential election, I feel more and more like if I'm going to fight this thing, that I want to do it someplace among the homeless, among the at the other end of the social spectrum, whatever, you know, we have probably the most corrupt, in our whole history, the most corrupt thing that's ever happened in terms of this buffoon that we have in the house. This guy is a third-rate mobster. He's a fool, and his incompetence is obvious to everyone. A few months ago, the entire United Nations laughed in his face. And so I feel like, and certainly this business of invading Venezuela or Iran is going to blow up in their faces. That would be the stupidest thing they could do. So I'm going to be in the park organizing or rallying or whatever we have to do against this corruption, certainly against a war in Venezuela. And I want to bring up this about the nuclear weapons development too. We could raise a beef about this stuff. So this, I'm where I want to be with the poorest people there are. So if I'm in this international struggle, that's where I'm going to place myself. And that's what I have to say about it.
Greg was next.
Just in a similar way that you folks here encourage other groups to come to your place to hold events, we also would like other groups to come to People's Park more, or just regular people. Come enjoy the park more. Be involved in it. Get involved in events. Produce a new event there, you know. In the warm weather, it's an awesome place to be. Yeah. It's, you know, you got trees. You know, if you set up a...
You're talking more and more softly. Yeah.
Sorry. So, you know, just try to come and use the park because it's good for us mentally, and it helps us connect. It's an open space, so you have foot traffic coming from all directions that might interact with you. And that's been really been a great experience for me to be there 18 years and to learn what it's like to be in a really wide open public space, people of all kinds. And I've learned so much, you know. It's really an awesome experience to be there and spend a lot of time there hanging out with people and encouraging people to enjoy the park, you know, and learn from the park. So that's all.
Norm.
This thing about blaming Trump for everything, there's a long history. There's 250 years of the same kind of history.
I know.
I know, you know. So when we, but the thing is, when we talk to people and we're trying to organize, just putting it off on Trump, for me, it's like what happened during Vietnam and the resistance. It took me a long time to understand that we have to resist. Things have been very difficult,
yeah.
You know, for me to catch on in places. A lot of people were smoking dope and saying, tune in, turn on, get, you know, whatever they
drop
said.
Out.
And I didn't like that at all. And I thought it was very destructive to whatever we were supposed to be doing, because making yourself distant from it through chemicals, I say, was not a good thing to do, and I certainly hated it for myself. This is what's going on by putting it all off on the Trump thing. Trump is a classical, not classical, we haven't had that kind of experience that I can remember. He's really distinctively horrible. The way we want to talk to people is with as much information and honesty as we can muster up, and if we say it's Trump corruption, we get people confused, they miss the point, and we can't try to move people into what we want to be saying. We want communalism, we want communism, we want people to be able to come together. You know, however you describe it, we want everybody to have housing. You cannot have everybody housed in a for-profit system. Doesn't work. And you cannot create educational environments in a capitalist system that work for the people, because the system has hold of it. And how do we do that, and how do we get away from age segregation? Not only age segregation, but segregation of history from science, from art, from engineering. You know, there's no reason to separate those. If you get everybody in the classroom, 2-year-olds and 15-year-olds and 50-year-olds,
everybody's going to learn stuff, right? And they don't have to be in a in an enforced classroom. It's an opportunity, you know, something that the kid says, yeah, "I'm going to come with you," holds your hand and says, "I'm going to come with you." You know, the same way human beings could behave.
Aiden was next.
So I really do believe that in 2019 the means of production have finally replicated themselves. Right now we're experimenting with new 3D technology. I mean, UC Berkeley has a new infrastructure called CAL, which actually uses light to build structures now. And so...
uses what?
It's called CAL. I forgot its acronym. It's
light.
Light technology and then a liquid membrane. It's interesting stuff. But... So what does that mean? The goal has to be, and what I believe, is ending alienation. And so, like you were saying, bringing people together, having that cohesive organizational structure, making sure we have communication roadmaps. Because students, I don't believe students will activate themselves without faculty support, partially because of the way students are being trained to listen to the professor. But like, we also have to realize that we are in an asymmetrical warfare state, that an EMP could be dropped at any time, and there goes our access to our cell phones, streetlights, all of it could be gone in an instant. So what do we have to do? We have to make sure that our networks are solidified. We have a syndicate available in case we have to communicate out to each other, and we really do need people not only who are on the ground, but who are, how do I say, those who are supporting the on-the-ground efforts, getting rid of misinformation around the area. If UC Berkeley comes out saying that these protesters are taking space from public use land, People's Park, well, we have to really say, well, these protesters are all Bay Area natives. For example, the ones who occupied the park. These protesters have need access to insulin, and their medical supplies have been taken away from them. What is the university actually doing to the people that it's supposed to represent? And so it starts here. It starts here making sure everyone has names, contact information, knows which organizations they're a part of, and really understanding that this is, and I liked what you said, common space, not communism, but commonism.
Yeah.
And that we all do have a home that's called Berkeley, and People's Park is one facet of that. I don't see how we can win this fight without eliminating alienation. And I don't see how we can eliminate alienation if we are alienated within groups. And so the time really is every chance you have to be building those connections. You have to be mentioning that People's Park is about common space. Common sense, really. And so that's what I want to say on that.
Okay, you're next.
Okay,
isn't there the rally? Didn't people have to get...
1 o'clock. Oh, 1 o'clock, okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
I just
12:30.
Right. Oh, okay.
We need to end then. Another group is coming in at once.
15
okay.
more minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
I thought it was coming in.
I just wanted to build a little bit on what Greg was saying, and about the alienation. The university is making a concerted effort to scare the students so that they will not use the park. They are running a campaign to say, stay away from the park. The park is dangerous. It's, you know, when people are separated from things or other people, they build up their fear because that's all they're hearing. It's really important that we make the park someplace that shows that there's communication there. I've been through the park I don't know how many times. I have never had anyone accost me in the park. I don't know how many times I've had people say, hey, how you doing, or have a good day. I hear that all the time. But the students are being made to feel that everyone in the park is a dangerous person who's going to jump them and steal everything and hurt them physically. And we need to change that view. And like you said, with the students being complacent, that they'll listen to the professors, they're listening to a bunch of hype about the park that is not what's really going on. I'm not saying there's never anything wrong going on in the park, but it's just like when you turn on the news and you hear 57 reports of what's wrong and you hear one thing that's of what's right.
right. where it's not really that kind of a balance in the real world.
Right.
The same thing is going on with the park and how it's being presented to the students. And the more things we can have in the park and the more groups that can meet in the park and hold positive things that students can relate to, the better off we're going to be in getting them to be part of this movement.
Right.
We need a reality show.
The hat in the back.
Yeah, it's just a comment in support of what you say. I think we shall take this opportunity for Defending People's Park to attack UC Berkeley and its ideology, and they attack the function of the UC Berkeley as in the equation created by elites to make money. So this is my point. I think we should take the opportunity to attack UC Berkeley.
Okay, and I have no one else on staff.
I just wanted to
okay.
to ask. I'm very sad. I would have loved to perform as a musician. I'm touring at the park, but I will leave soon.
Oh.
But after the meeting, if you know any places like this in the Southwest, you can tell me. So I would be happy to perform there and support the movement.
We have a meeting at 1 o'clock of all of us at the park.
Oh, going to the park.
Not Lake Merritt. You're not talking about the
Venezuela
thing.
Pardon?
You're not talking about the Venezuela thing.
No. Every Sunday at 1 o'clock we have a general meeting at the park.
I wanted to add that we're here every Sunday morning from 10:30 to 12:30, and we pay the librarian $50 for that, but we invite people to come in free. And next week we have a talk on Venezuela. Following that, we have Al Sarges, who's an expert on Ingalls and war, saying he's going to talk about the resistance within the military against the Vietnam War and other instances of that. And then we're going to go and switch, and we have our monthly reading of volume one of Capital, which is actually a pretty spirited group discussing Capital. So I hope people will think about all this and come back.
Joy.
And also free donuts.
Get your 50 today. Can I?
Pardon?
Get your 50 today.
Got $51.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
Can I?
Go ahead.
I just want to say, if anybody's going to Lake Merritt for the Venezuela thing, I'd love to go with you. Nobody's going? Okay.
That's the anti-war demonstration.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting subject.
Is there something I don't know that's happened, or is it just
they just mentioned
No. I'll talk to them. I just didn't know if there had been some current affair that is just with Venezuela.
No. Same thing.
It seems like just saber rattling at the present time, but Bolton is putting some kind of cards on the table, I believe.
Okay.
I haven't been keeping up.
They moved troops to
They're making donations to Venezuela, and Venezuela is refusing those donations.
Uh-huh.
What's the reason for them?
They have, I think, moved troops to Colombia.
These American troops in Colombia?
There was a story last week in the Miami Voice or something like that that had pictures.
Right. The donations are coming through Colombia. And Venezuela knows that Colombia, soldiers coming from Colombia is an invasion.
A lot of oil there.
That's right. A whole lot of oil right off the coast there.
Crude oil.
So I think discussion is kind of coming to a conclusion. People. Thank you all.